but newspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10 and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre LaFon, Wendy Foster offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And we have Peggy Hogan, an educator here, as our guest today. Welcome, Peggy.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, Peggy is really interesting because Peggy is, a pioneer in the sense that what she does, and she does successfully, is not typically what people think about when they think about training animals or their kids to be musicians. Her view, and I'm going to let her talk about that, is, and I love this quote, she doesn't like to nag people. She likes people to come to terms with what it is that they need to do and to use positive enforcement to take advantage of whatever it is that interests the student. How did I do?
That was great. Positive
okay,
reinforcement.
You. So we're done now,
yes.
Right?
We're done. We can just shut down the show, bring out the beer. No, just kidding. Thank you very much for that. I do like to take positive reinforcement into everything I do when I teach. Basically, I'm going to say if the student doesn't understand what I'm asking the student to do, then I need to do something different. So it's my responsibility as a teacher to make sure that the student understands. I don't just it's not like the shower method of teaching where you stick the kid in the shower and when you're done, you turn off the shower and you see what sticks. That's not what I like to do. I like to say, is this working? I watch, I evaluate. If it's not working, I'm going to change how I say it. And then basically, it's the positive reinforcement part of it is what motivates, whether it's a horse because I train horses or whether it motivates the child because I teach kids to play piano and have ever since I got out of Westmont. It's what is motivating that student so that they take charge of their own learning.
What do you do if a student is taking piano because their parents want them to, and whether they have talent or not, they just don't like it? Do you ever tell a parent this is not going to ever work?
Well, let's back it up, because your first thing was they're taking piano because they don't want to. So if I have a parent call me and say, I have a student that hates music and doesn't want to learn piano, will you teach him? I'll say, I'm not the one. I don't think that's fair to do to the child. If I have a parent that calls me and says, my kid just really wants to be able to play piano, you bet I'll jump in there and play. And the first thing I'm going to say is, what does your child want to play? What does your son or daughter like? What kind of music? And if what they really like is some tune from a video game, that's what I start with. But if the parent really says, I don't want that, then I just say, well, there are other teachers that might be more suited to what you're expecting.
And you think that this is applicable to academic learning as well? What if someone is because they don't have the inclination or they don't have the aptitude, doesn't like a particular subject at school? Should the school be sensitive to that and point them in a
schools.
Different direction?
So I've had the luxury of teaching one-on-one my whole life. I'm not a school teacher, and I admire anybody that can stand up there and do riot control, because that's what it looks like to me, riot control. So I need to stay within the confines of how I've taught and say that I like to find ways to motivate regardless of talent or ability. I have a 90-year-old woman that I've started teaching piano, and she definitely has some cognitive changes, but she's doing well, and that's because I'm setting it up so that the learner can learn in a way that's effective for her. So really, it's again back to that. It's a study of one. I don't envy the teachers. I think that's a really difficult task. But when they're with me, I'm going to gear the teaching towards that one person.
Now, when you went to school, you studied behavioralism. And this obviously, not obviously, but it sounds like a lot of what you do is comes from that body of work.
And it's kind of been an interesting journey because my Westmont journey was about music. And I learned to be a musician and a better teacher with music. But not a few years after that, I went back to grad school, Pacifica Graduate Institute, and I got my master's in counseling psychology. That's more Jungian. That's going to be more analyzing people and their feelings. And then as I started training animals more, I went back and embraced what behaviorism is. With behaviorism, I'm going to say if you took a Jungian analyst and a behaviorist and locked them in a room, you could draw crowds, sell tickets, make a lot of, like, because they're not really happy with each other in each other's worlds. But I still find that both educations were really valuable. So I'm kind of an interesting mix. I'm more of a humanist, but I also believe in what is achieved with the study of behavior and how behavior is changed and how we can effectively set it up to change it easily.
You know what's so fascinating? I spent 12 years after I retired and came out here teaching investments at City College. And the textbooks changed dramatically during that period where it was basically Keynesian economics to modern portfolio theory, and it ended up with behavioral investing, where the idea was people don't act rationally. And if you look at any economic theory, it says the first assumption is people will behave in a rational way to maximize their highest return. And what the behavioralists said, that's not true. A lot of investing today is done with very creative people that have thrown out all of the old paradigms, all of the old systems, and base their strategies on behavioralism.
So that's really interesting.
Yeah, so you must be making a lot of money in the stock market.
No, but introduce me to your friend. That's really interesting. Yeah, that's really fun. No, I can see that because basically what we're looking at with behaviorism is what motivates a person to do what they do. And if the environment is set up right and the person makes a choice to do something, the consequences of that choice is going to drive their next choice. So if they, I'm going to just guess, but if they look at the stock market and they thumb through and think, well, that looks good and it's a fairly random choice, but it's random and they were feeling good that day, they had their coffee, everything was moving right, and that particular, and if that particular stock went up, chances are the next time they do it, they're going to base it on random choice, not necessarily a rational decision, because they're going to do what they think just worked. So I'd be willing to bet that somewhere along the lines that's what the
Well, you're very smart because there's been a number of studies at the best schools that have studied that very issue and found that not only does that happen, but the more success they have acting in a random way, the more they believe that they're really very good at it.
Yes.
And that's when they end up losing everything.
Right.
But
you got it.
Yeah, there's a bias that people have about their own ability to succeed. And it's about knowledge, too. People think that they have more knowledge than they have, which is so interesting. So, you know, the thing that that sometimes investors and public policy people ask about new ideas in teaching is, can you scale it up? That is, can you not just do it on one-on-one, can you actually create a system where the masses can get the benefit? So you're doing this one-on-one. It works. We'll get into some more detail later about what, in fact, does work. But is there a way to scale this up so that it can be introduced in the schools and so that more and more kids can get the benefit of it?
It is. And it's being upscaled with one form of teaching. It's called TAG teaching by TAG Teach International, TAG T-A-G.
I played TAG when I was in school. Is that what this
I knew
is?
That was going to happen. TAG Teach International. And the people that have pioneered this are reaching every branch of education, including they just did a seminar with surgeons, teaching surgeons how to correctly tie surgical knots. and they are achieving results quicker, better. It was designed by a surgeon in concert with the people, one of them, Teresa McKeon, in Tag Teach International. They are impacting every form of education. It's phenomenal. And basically, it's clicker training for people.
Okay, so this is the tease. When we come back, we're going to talk about not only Tag, the theory of
Tag teaching.
Tag teaching and click teaching. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone?
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Caricello. I'm here today with Peggy Hogan, a educator. And before the break, we were talking about Tag Teach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I was told that it's not about playing tag. So let's go through it again. What is Tag Teach?
Tag Teach is a really precise way of teaching measurable behaviors. So let's take an example of a surgeon again. There was just recently a forum where some surgeons were being taught to tie surgical knots. And the teacher would, let's say, introduce a beginning step. Now, I'm just making this up because I wasn't at the symposium, but I know the concepts and I know how to teach this way. So if it would be left hand over right hand, so they're holding the tag, the yarn. they don't stitch with yarn, whatever surgical thread they have. So left hand over right hand, that would be the very beginning step. And so the educator would literally mark that so that as they said, left hand touches right hand, they would go and they would make a sound or some sort of yes or some sort of symbol, some sort of auditory thing that says you did that correctly. There's no value judgment. There are no words. It's just if the person doing it hears the click, they know they've done it right. If they don't hear the click, they go, oh, my goodness, what went wrong? So it brings our attention right to that moment of physical activity. Another one would be tennis, where somebody's taking a tennis lesson and the person says, no, you did that all wrong. You've got to take your racket back a little bit farther. I want it to kind of think of it behind the fence, whatever. So they'll have some lots and lots of words of how they're going to teach that. Whereas with tag teaching, it's very specific. Right elbow at side. I'm just going to make that one up. Right elbow at side. So that when the student goes to perform that, they're going to hear a tag or a click. If they don't do it, they won't hear it. And they'll look down. They'll literally look at their body. Oh, I get it. And then in the very next step, they can improve their own performance. So it eliminates. And speaking of teens and speaking of educating and impacting people that are maybe even having learning disabilities, it is the value judgments that creep into the process are so profound. And even if we think we're doing the best job in the world by saying, boy, you're doing a really great job. Boy, you're doing a really good job. Boy, I really like that. Still, when we don't say that, that can be devastating to our learner because they didn't hear the good job, whereas a click or just a slight auditory marker gives them the information that they need, and they will self-correct, and the teacher doesn't have to go in there and mess around with it. Tag Teach is phenomenal. It's working with kids with autism. They're getting through programs that might take 2 years, and within 6 months, they're doing the material that might have taken 2 years before. So it's relatively new. Tag Teach International can be found online, and it affects every potential way of teaching.
But does this have to be taught individually? Because how does a teacher teach 30 kids with one clicker?
You know, one really fun way is because let's take the environment of gymnastics. Okay, so one of the founders is a gymnast and did a lot of teaching of gymnastics. And she has kids learning how to tag each other so that you can have the child know what the criterion is, left arm at head high. I'm making these up. And she knows what the criteria is. And the kids can tag each other. That not only empowers the kid that's watching because they have to learn, well, what is this specific thing we're trying to do? But it gets groups of people helping each other. So one teacher, yeah, it's hard with one clicker. But when you literally can get groups of kids working together teaching each other, they actually learn quicker.
So we have two different products here. Let me use the word product. One is Tag Teach, and the other is using a clicker, because clickers have other uses other than in tag teaching, doesn't it?
So let me address that. We'll take one step back. Operant conditioning and training with a marker signal. Basically, training with a marker signal tells the animal or the student, I like what you just did. The way to tell them is to make a sound, or yes, or good. It doesn't matter what the sound is. Generally speaking, the click is a very pure, and they actually learn a little quicker with it. But you make a sound that says, you just did that, click, I like it, and then you give the person or the animal something that they want. If it's an animal, it's a little bite of food.
What does the word operant mean?
So operant is back to B.F. Skinner and behaviorism, and it's a view of looking at behavior. So there are four ways we can affect behavior, basically, that we look at in this context. And that is positive reinforcement and negative reinforcement. Then there's positive punishment, which is going to wig everybody out because nobody knows what that really means, and negative punishment. But let me make it even easier. I'm going to give you something you want because you did something, or I can pout. You did something I didn't like, and I'm going to take my toys and go home. That's one way to change behavior. I can smack you, which is one way to change behavior, or I can say, wow, really nice job. Here's a 20. So those are basically, that's the shortcut of saying that's how we affect change and behavior change in our world.
So the best way is to give people money, right? Is
that, well,
no, I'm joking.
I'm going to say, yeah, because there's discretionary effort. We come here. We don't, if the dollar bills quit showing up, how long do you think you would do this? And if you did something because it was inherently felt good, you would continue. But the inherently feeling good is the motivator. So you are still working for positive reinforcement.
How about with marriage counseling? Instead of having the husband or wife blow up at the spouse for something, what if they just clicked?
Well, okay.
I'm just, you know, seriously, I mean, what happens? Fights. People tend to get a fight and it escalates.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe a click would just, like, everyone gets a chance to rethink what's going on. What did I do wrong? It's a click.
How
I should
about
get a click.
This? The husband is sitting sweetly and says, honey, I really like the dinner you just cooked. Thank you for all your effort. Do you think the wife is more likely to go out and cook more dinners as opposed to the husband that says, you burned the stew again?
So that's bad to say that. Mm. Is that
you
what
tell
saying?
Me. <It's>, I'm
I think this is a whole other show.
This is a whole separate. But in other words, people tend to respond to what feels good to us. And reinforcement is in the eye of the recipient. So it could be that if the husband says, honey, I really like the stew tonight, that could piss her off.
So let me ask you a controversial question. There are some people that say, and they've said it to me, that they love horses, but horses are really dumb.
Oh, and you got to meet my horses.
Well, but I mean, so can horses really appreciate the kind of reinforcement and really understand and get the benefit of it? Or are they, you know, beasts of burden that you just need to be whipped into shape?
Can I tell you what some of my horses have done? And these were rescue horses. I have 5 miniature horses that actually came to me with behavioral issues. So they were, some of them were flat dangerous. Okay. I've got one horse who's learned, it's called concept training. So match to sample is a concept training. Basically, if I held up an orange and I held up another orange, and let's say the other orange was placed to where the animal could see it. And if I held up an orange and I say target, he'll look at the orange and he'll go to where the other orange is and touch it. So now let's make it more difficult. Let's put an orange and a pen and some headphones and some other things on that bench. And I can pick up the headphones and I say target, and he'll look at the headphones and he'll go over to the bench and he'll touch the headphones. I don't say the word headphones. That's called matching to sample. That's the kind of level of teaching and seeing the intellect of kids. I've got animals that can do that. I've taught them match to sample. So those are called concept training. Horses, given the opportunity, are amazingly brilliant.
So can kids learn with a teacher like you how to, for example, play the piano because they really enjoy the kind of positive reinforcement you give them, but they don't have any talent. They just don't really get it, but they want to get it because they really enjoy your process.
I'm not a big believer in talent. I'm a big believer in set up the situation so the student can learn. I've never met a kid I couldn't teach.
See, that's interesting because I had, and this was amazing because the woman was being paid. When I was 10 years old, my parents got me a piano teacher. Mm. And after 3 lessons, and she was being paid, after 3 lessons, she said, I can't take your money anymore. He has no talent.
Well,
yeah,
she's a loser, not you.
Okay, so you think that it's...
I think she was a loser, not you.
Yeah.
That's me.
Can I lie down and talk about my other problems?
Yes, please do.
Because you're giving me, you know, you're giving me positive
reinforcement. Please do.
Bring you people you love, Neil.
So it would be that blanket.
Anyway, we'll get back to my neuroses in a later moment, a later show. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a 4-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a 4-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Peggy Hogan, an educator. And we're talking about some cutting-edge ways of teaching. And before we go on, let's just step back a minute and ask Peggy and find out about how Peggy got interested in this. So you grew up where?
Oh, I grew up in L.A., Eagle Rock. near Pasadena and Glendale, so that's where I was raised. It's actually fairly rural compared to what LA was like. Nice little pocket.
And so were you interested in, at, when you were a kid, in horses and music?
Music and horses. I actually have a little brochure of a piano recital I was in, and I wasn't even four. So, and because I was the last of five, my parents were into music, and our piano teacher lived across the street. So I don't ever remember not playing piano. And I don't ever remember not loving horses. But there were five kids, so we didn't own one. But my mom was raised on a farm in Colorado, and she knew I was horse crazy. And she would take me to Pickwick Stables in Burbank, and so we would rent a horse, and I could ride there.
And when you were a kid, did it ever occur to you that you could find teaching interesting or a passion?
No.
So that came later.
That did come later. It really definitely came later. But training animals, I knew that that was something I loved. I trained a dog. I got an agent for him. It was really, really fun. I was maybe 15 or 16. That dog knew hand signals. I used food, but not like I do now. And unfortunately, he got a tennis ball that he ingested, and he had a blockage, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong. But I actually had an agent for that dog. I was going to be an animal trainer for the movies. That was what I wanted to be at 15.
And instead, you went to Westmont.
Yeah, funny thing. Okay, I went to Westmont because at 16, when I graduated from high school, my dad said, "We're not sending her to UCSB. We're going to put her someplace we think she'll be safe and a young girl in school. That's where we're going to put her. Plus the religious background.
And you went through Westmont and
all 4 years,
and that helped you get a sense of what you wanted to do, or no?
I was pretty young, and my college teacher said, "You're really analytical, and you're great at music, and you're really analytical. I think you should learn how to teach." So he's the one that put me on the path of teaching. I taught there for a year, some students. And so ever since I graduated from Westmont, I've been teaching piano.
And you went afterwards back to school to get an MA at Pacifica in psychology. Mm-hmm. Does psychology always interest you?
Yes. And it was because I wanted to be a better teacher. So once I started teaching, and that early, early motto, if I can't figure out why this student isn't learning something, it's because I'm not teaching it well enough. So that was a life journey and a dedication to a process that said, they're not learning it, figure out a different way to show it to them. Don't give up after three lessons. If they're not learning, it's my responsibility.
That's a very, very difficult thing to do. Most people don't have the ego strength to embrace that philosophy.
And I've done it since I was first teaching. Dang it, they didn't get it. How can I say it again? What do I need to do to change how I'm presenting the material? So that is my creed.
So you went to Pacifica, and that helped sort of combine the skill set you were able to develop in teaching, whether it's music and animals, to the techniques about behavioral.
Yes, because Pacifica is not about behaviorism, but it was the fact that I was running into people with issues. I mean, look at what you were just describing about what you went through in terms of how teachers taught you. So there are roadblocks to teaching, and I wanted to find out more and more, like, why am I not reaching this student? Well, they just found out that at school their buddies made fun of them, and they came home completely overwhelmed by that. So I really wanted to study, in my own mind, what is it that keeps us from learning? So that's why I went back to Pacifica. And it's also why I embraced behaviorism, because I think it's also part of the puzzle. Just don't let the Pacifica people
Well, you know,
hear that.
But the thing that's so interesting about, one of the things, what AHA does and what you do is that you mentioned, you know, in a way, bullying and not fitting in, and that's so much of the challenge today. And
it's huge.
And so, you know, I can imagine. Just to take an example, you know, what if a boy wants to take piano lessons?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, happens all the time.
Okay, and then you know, is there pressure there that makes it even more difficult?
Or they're teased, or they want to sing and they like to sing, but their buddies tease them, or they want to dance and their buddies tease them, or what's popular is football. So they're taken away. And that does happen a lot. I've seen that happen. I've had that happen.
So what's learner-centered teaching?
I'm going to say a lot of what I've been talking about is that the learner is the one who's going to direct where the training needs to happen. I need to be able to meet the animal or the person with what they bring to the table. So if they like video game songs and they're motivated, but they have a dexterity problem, I'm not going to sit and demand that they play Bach. I'm going to say, well, look at that. And this is a true story. I had a kid I taught years ago, dexterity issues, and five notes in a row, placing his hand to play five notes in a row was so difficult that we spent about 3 or 4 weeks, and when he could play five notes up and five notes down, we went out and got some ice cream, and we had a big celebration. That's the kind of mind, hand, finger coordination issues that we dealt with, and yet he still did a great job later. But it's letting the learner direct the pace of the learning. It's not my agenda.
And part of your, a good part of your philosophy is accommodating the learner's style of learning.
Absolutely.
So if somebody, and I know this happened with one of my sons, you know, that he learned to read, couldn't learn to read in the traditional way, and until they tested him, they realized they were teaching him wrong. And
And he
ended up at Georgetown Law, even though when he was in the second grade, he had a vocabulary of two words because he wasn't being taught the way he needed to be taught.
Good for you for getting that handled, because it's true. I mean, I have this little paradigm in my brain as I just check to see, is this person kinesthetic, or are they auditory, or are they visual? And piano, for example, takes a lot.
What's kinesthetic?
Of all three. Kinesthetic is I got to do it before I know how to do it. I got to get my hands on this thing and play, splash around, watch what my fingers do before I really understand. Kinesthetic, a lot of people need to learn by, you've heard
experience.
Of people say, I've just got to do it. Let me try it. Let me try it and see what it's like.
Interesting.
Then
yeah.
You can give them more information. I could explain how to shoot a basketball, but until they've held the basketball and thrown around a little bit into the air, they're just not going to get the information.
So when you teach someone horseback riding, are they there to and I'm not using the word just in a pejorative sense, but are they there just to learn how to ride, or are they there to create an acceptance of learning that's going to help them in so many other areas?
That's a really great question, because honestly, if someone comes to me to be able to ride a horse, they're not going to get on that horse until they've learned how to teach the horse themselves. And that means learning about positive reinforcement, because I want the horse to work for them, not me. And in order to have the horse work for them without a lot of aversives, they need to learn how to teach the horse themselves. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty tall order.
And is there this is kind of silly in a way, but what if the horse is too well trained so that it just listens to the kid no matter what the kid's doing? Is that ever, there's nothing to do. You're just like, it's like an automatic transmission.
Introduce me to that horse.
Okay, so it doesn't.
I'd like to meet that horse.
So those horses don't really exist.
No, I'm being a little bit flippant, yeah. But it's a good question. Yeah. So.
And what's the answer?
They're living creatures with a mind. And if something happens and it really is not in their best interest, every horse will do something different than what that kid says. If the kid says they're going to kick him because they want him to go across that stream, and that horse knows that it's not safe because of what rocks, whatever. If the horse stops, then that's important. That's good information. That's not being a bad horse.
Okay, so we need the horse to tell us what to do.
So let me follow up on that. Let me follow up on that too, because there are, quote, dead broke horses. And I think it's called learned helplessness, and that is not a good thing in my book.
So the horse really sometimes really needs to be rehabilitated before.
Learned helplessness is an ugly thing. I'll tell you a training story about it when
we come back. Yeah, I think it's true sometimes with married couples. Sometimes I don't really perform as I should. I get accused of being helpless.
Okay.
You're listening to Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Uh-huh.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Peggy Hogan, an educator, and we're talking about one of my favorite subjects, helplessness?
Learned helplessness.
Learned helplessness.
But seriously, okay, this is hard, but it's a true study. It was done bunches of years ago, but it was a true study. So they took some dogs and they put them in a cage, and they had the cage wired so that it could give them an electric shock. They would give them an electric shock and the dogs would jump over the fence to the other side. They learned very quickly, get the heck off the side that's giving us a shock, right? Then they made it so that the dogs were tethered and could not escape. All right, this is bunches of years ago. Okay, lots of things were done in the early scientific studies. So the animals would whimper, lie down, lick their paw, and stay there, right? Then they changed the environment again, and the dogs could move. They were given the freedom. They were not tethered, but they didn't move. They just stayed there. Okay, it's called learned helplessness, and it is a tragic thing that can happen to anybody, any human, any animal. They learned that resistance is futile, wow. Right? So horses, there are a lot of horses out there that have learned if they don't behave, life is going to get really nasty. So they don't misbehave. But they are, when I see a horse that looks like that, there's not much life in their eyes. They know they had better do the job. Probably the only thing that would derail a horse like that is if a bomb went off next to it. And even that, some of the horses might just stand. That's not natural. Most living creatures would jump if some really big startling thing happened next to it. But these horses have learned, shoot me. There's not a lot of life there. Quite the opposite of what I've got in the animals I work with. And then the animals that I've rehabbed, those animals experienced a lot of aversion in their lives, and yet with positive reinforcement, they've come back to a place where they can trust. And they don't need those nasty behaviors. They don't need to bite. They don't need to kick. They don't need to strike. They don't need to rear and run away as if they were to be killed. They will come to me and they trust. Well, the trust was based on giving them control. The trust was based on setting it up so that they could get what they want. They had choice and control. And it was real simple. Do you want this bite of carrot? Cool. Touch this target. And the animal learned that if it touched the target, it would get a bite of carrot. And that was the start of it. It was really, really amazing what they would do when they had choice and control and something that they wanted, as opposed to how they'd been taught, which is, if you don't do this, remember that, if you don't quit crying, I'm going to give you something to cry about. Mm-hmm. I remember that one.
Yeah, that's pretty nasty.
Yeah. Well, that's most of horse training. If you don't do what I want, the pressure and the discomfort will escalate.
Well, that's Cesar Millan's dog teaching. It's, you know, he became an international star by beating up on dogs. And it was so interesting, when it got really nasty, they didn't show it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they just like it. You come back a week later after your dog has been whatever.
You guys listening didn't see, but I almost had a seizure when we brought up that word. Yeah. Yeah. And kids are subjected to that, too. I mean, we don't have to teach with coercion. We can teach with choice and empowering the kids to learn. I love teaching in that kind of a paradigm.
Yeah, this is right up Aha's alley where, you know, they have taken kids that, you know, really have serious, you know, issues about who they are and what they could achieve. And when they get through the program, they're just dynamite. It's just,
absolutely.
You know.
Imagine taking a child like that and bringing him to interact with a horse. And I say to them, okay, you want to have this horse walk along beside you. We're not going to have a lead rope on it. We're not going to have a halter on it. You've got to act in a way that this horse wants to walk with you. What do you think you need to do? So that's how I have kids interact with horses. And basically I'll say, okay, you got a little bite of carrot there. When he starts to move with you, give him that bite of carrot. And my horses are well trained enough, but any horse would do this. They say, well, okay, kid, carrots. I usually know how to follow kids. And then they will offer that behavior. But still, the kids learn that it's not a matter of if they walk off and leave the horse 5 feet behind, they've got to look at, well, gosh, what did I do? Why didn't that horse walk with me? What have I done to not make that learner help and understand what I'm doing?
Last week we had Habitat for Humanity on with some of the volunteers that have been and continue to do work in the mudslide area of Montecito. Oh, and you were a volunteer also during the fires and mudslides in a place that I don't know if everyone realizes, but, you know, if you didn't notice, horses are very big and they don't fit behind someone's trunk. So you were involved in rescues of these big animals, weren't you?
I did help. I did help a lot. And I also had my own that we had to evacuate, and then I also helped with other people's horses and evacuate them. I have minis and full-size horses. But one of the amazing things was even at Earl Warren Showgrounds, where all 10 of these horses were that I was helping, things were pretty tense. But we could take these little horses that I had and go out and visit, help other people, bring these horses over, slightly entertain them with some of the fun things that these little guys did. It was a very therapeutic application in that stressful environment. So even in that environment, the horses still had choice, and I was still giving them something they liked, which was a little bite of carrot, to do these activities. But we actually were able to bring some light into a really stressful environment. Really stressful environment.
And
over
they
there.
Sense that. So, was there any regression among these horses when they're in a position where they sense real danger, particularly fire?
You know, it was stressful. My horses were stressed. You betcha. And also, just change of environment. You think when we go from somebody's house and we go visiting, it isn't easy to just stay in a new place.
That's why I don't go any place.
There, see, right here. You live in this studio. I know.
I live by myself with my wife and my three dogs, and I don't go out. It's too scary.
It is scary.
Yeah.
Think about taking horses and sticking them in a little box where all these. We had cows and pigs, llamas, goats. In the stalls next to him, my horses were like, what the heck has happened here? It was a zoo over there.
I have to give a shout out to the Bacara, which was fantastic. A couple of times when I was evacuated there, and I thought I was being intrusive because I had three dogs, there were people with parrots and cats.
Oh, yeah.
and animals I couldn't even identify.
Yeah,
and they didn't care. They said, you know, come on in. It's we're here to serve the community. So I really
amazing.
Think that
is,
they
that
did a really wonderful thing. So can we use this experience with these to help these kids? They had trauma too. These kids, you know, went through, all of us went through a really tough time in the last 30 days.
But
animals can be soothing, can't they?
Absolutely.
They can soothe each other, the kids and the horses.
Yes, and thank you for that, because I do want to bring up one of the directions I've taken lately is working with the Seaside Wellness Gardens. And it is a wonderful nonprofit organization in Carpinteria. And we're starting to bring in a variety of things that help people in being well, and people with abilities and a variety of abilities. Because I don't even like the word disabilities anymore. And So we've got kids that'll visit these areas. Different. We have different areas set up in the gardens. We've got agriculture. We've got growing beds where the kids can learn and just come be around growing things. I've got two miniature horses there that we're working to have them be kind of adjunctive therapeutic setting. So these gardens are phenomenal, and the kids can come. And we do want kids to interact with these animals, and we do want kids to be able to heal even from their experience of what's gone on in our community.
Isn't it amazing that big horses can be so gentle around little kids, particularly little kids that have issues?
I found
it to be really...
So the folks who have PTSD from what's happened here with the fires and the mudslides, it'd be a great place for them.
Great place for them. And we're working towards growing. We are in the growing stage of it, but it's a phenomenal place. And it is for everybody, every walk. And we need volunteers. We need volunteers.
And you need money, too. And this is a 501c3. And the name of it is Seaside Wellness Gardens, and there's a website, and if people feel like this is something that they'd like to support, they can go right on that website and donate.
Yes, yes. That would be fantastic, and I'd love to share a story about one little horse that I have that I saw work with an autistic boy. It was a wonderful
scene.
Okay,
so we're going to share that story when we come back with our final segment. You've been listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB. We'll see you soon.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Peggy Hogan, an educator, and we were just discussing a program at the Seaside Wellness Gardens, a 501c3 that could use your help. But you were going to tell us about some of the
quick story
about the successes.
There is a little horse. His name is Handsome. He's really funny. He's a mini. And I watched him with a child one day, and I was about 15 feet away and watching very, very carefully. Handsome was behind a rail so that his head could hang over this rail, and the little child wanted to pet his face. The child reached up, put both of his hands on both sides of Handsome's face, and he started patting, and fairly hard enough that the horse picked his head up higher, like, I don't think I'm needing that guy. But, and that's where I was going to intervene. I was going to step in and make it not be uncomfortable for the horse. But Handsome lowered his head down again, and the child started patting, but not as hard. So then Handsome lifted his head just a little. He didn't leave. He could have. He was at liberty. He was free to leave the zone. But the child stopped patting. Handsome put his head back down into his hands, and then the child started stroking. And I was almost in tears because I thought, who am I to think I can be teaching this when this little horse did the most phenomenal job of training this kid, just how hard he wanted to be touched. To me, it gives me goosebumps telling the story. It's so powerful. That's my idea of setting it up for success.
And also the child had to have some level of empathy in order to understand.
But he was autistic.
Which is an interesting question. You know, I ask this for a lot of guests because one of the things that AHA really believes in is that empathy is a real key to becoming a productive member of any society.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people don't exhibit empathy. And the question is, can you learn empathy? And if so, does your program help to develop it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you have to figure out how am I going to help this animal do this thing again, and you don't have a lead rope and you can't coerce the animal, now what do I do? And so they have to learn to read the animal. And I think learning to read what the animal is offering so that you can get more of that is a form of empathy.
One of the things that I found so amazing, and I have no explanation for it, but when my granddaughter, who had many, many issues and was severely handicapped, went to a special riding school, it was the one time when she sat straight.
Isn't that amazing?
Where she was
that's
in control, mm-hmm. and it was instantaneous. Mm-hmm. They put her, you know, she was walking around, you know, without any great mm-hmm. motion. They put her on a horse, a big horse, mm-hmm. and it was like magic.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand. I mean, it's probably a zillion explanations, but it was just absolutely amazing.
And there's a shout out to Hearts Adaptive. We have a great therapeutic
program. Yeah.
They've been
on the show. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, because they're
really
doing
works.
Some amazing work.
It really works. So you also have an access to a website called Click Training Horses.
Click for Training Horses, yes. So the form that people know it is popularly called as clicker training. There's going to be a lot of value judgment on that. People think they know what it is, but I do have a website, clickertraininghorses.com, for my own material.
And you have videos too, right?
Tons of videos on YouTube. Tons and tons and tons of videos on YouTube.
Yeah. The other voice you're hearing is Lisa Newman, our producer.
She's my friend.
Who very really speaks, but she's so enthusiastic about this program, she could not help herself. So thank you, Lisa, for participating.
Yeah, you're welcome.
How do we get in touch with you? If you're interested in any of the things that you're doing, whether it's piano, whether it's training a horse, whether it's teaching your child horseback riding, whether it's wanting to borrow money from you, how do we get in touch with you?
Email would be great. I have clickertraininghorses@cox.net.
Okay.
We'll try that. clickertraininghorses@cox.net is a great way to get in touch with me.
Okay, wonderful. Peggy, I'm really happy that you were here today. I wonder if it's too late for me to take piano lessons.
I
can re-educate myself for that terrible teacher when I was 10 years old.
Do it.
You know, you're on.
I'll video it.
You'll video it.
What did they say? Give us 5 minutes to sell tickets and draw a crowd. No, seriously. Seriously, I'll do it. Yeah. I am a good teacher.
Can you imagine all of this and all of this discussion, after 3 sessions, she says, I'm really sorry.
Oh, cruel.
Well, thanks so much, Peggy, for being here. Peggy Hogan, a wonderful educator. You can get in touch with her again at
clickertraininghorses@cox.net.
And you've been listening to AHA Presents About Education. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week. It's 3